Live from the capital of Raider Nation, Las Vegas, Nevada. It's Silver and Black Today, your daily dose of all things Las Vegas Raiders football. News, views, guests, and your phone calls are all part of the game plan. There's only one nation, and it listens here. Now your host, Scott Gulbranson.
Hour number two, Silver and Black Today on this Thursday. Powered by our friend Sam and Ash, injury attorneys, 702-820-1234, because you deserve what's right. If you're online, you want to get online, give us a call, 702-365-9200. You'll be on hold for a little while as we welcome our guests. Now we go out on the newsmaker line, and we bring in Danny Heifetz. Danny is a writer for The Ringer. You can follow him on Twitter, at Danny_HEIFETZ. We're here to talk about the NFL playoffs. Danny, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, let's jump right in. Evan and I both have some games here that we want to chat with you about and kind of get your view of covering the NFL on them. But for me, the big game of the weekend, the one I'm most excited to sit down and watch, excuse me, as a fan, is really the Ravens and the Bills. You look at both of these teams going head on. The Bills continue to just do so well behind Josh Allen. Of course, their defense is also doing well. And then, of course, Baltimore with Lamar Jackson. You look at this game, Lamar Jackson said this week, Danny, that he doesn't even know that he's ever been in snow. And you look at the weather and what might happen up in Buffalo. How do you see this one coming out? What does Baltimore need to do to go into Buffalo and win? And what do the Bills need to do to stop that offense on the Ravens side?
Well, first of all, the snow thing is real. I'm a believer that if you have never posted an Instagram of yourself in a jacket or the snow, you're probably not going to play well in the snow. You just need some life experience. But no, the Ravens have to run the game. It's January football, right? I know it's probably not that cold out there in Vegas, but it's January football. You got to run. I mean, this is a team that 2-3 weeks ago against the Bengals ran for 400 yards. That's insane. Yeah. There's actually a great stat I saw that there's only five players that have more than 8 plays this season with 20-plus yard runs, and of those 5, the Ravens have 3 of those players. Gus Edwards, J.K. Dobbins, and Lamar all have 8 or more 20-plus yard runs, so they're going to have to run the ball. And the Bills' defense, quite honestly, their biggest weakness is the running game. They haven't defended the run well. I think they've given up they've averaged more than like 120 yards allowed per game in each of the last months. The Bills' defense is soft is not the word. They're a tough defense, but they're not really well suited to be guarding the Ravens on the ground.
Hey, Danny, I live out here in Western New York. So let me tell you, the forecast right now, they're calling for 50% chance of precipitation, windy with possible snow showers. So, Lamar better get ready for a little bit of unpleasant weather. If the weather should play a role in this game, who do you think it favors?
You know, that's a really good question because, ironically, now maybe I'm going a little too out there, but I think in a way it could favor the Ravens because I think the Bills really don't have a great running game and that you don't want to be tossing the ball around too much if there's snow because the Bills don't really run. I mean, you know, you're in Western New York. The Bills, even when they're up, they kind of just keep passing. And the thing to keep an eye on, I think, is fumbling, really. The Ravens led the league in forced fumbles. Marlon Humphrey had 8 forced fumbles this season. That's like the all-time record for the Ravens. It was the most, I think, in 8 years any player's had. And he's not doing it by stripping the quarterback. He's doing it by peanut punching the ball at a player's hands. And, you know, Josh Allen's not turned the ball over anywhere near like the last few years. But he's not perfect at the ball. He had that strange fumble last week that almost could have flipped the game, but the Bills recovered it. But I think that the snow actually, the Bills team, I'm actually a little more worried about their ball security. And then the Ravens, I think the Ravens, even though Lamar's, you know, he's from Florida, but they have a cold weather attitude, a way that I think they could help them physically kind of overpower the Ravens in the trenches on both sides of the ball.
Danny Heifetz from The Ringer writes about the NFL, is talking to us about the playoffs coming up this weekend, divisional weekend. We'll stay on the AFC side, Danny. The Browns go into Kansas City, and of course, everybody always looks at Kansas City as being this big juggernaut. The Browns have surprised people. Of course, they went into Pittsburgh and punched the Steelers in the mouth despite all their COVID challenges, despite not having their head coach and play caller on the field. Is this the weekend that it finally catches up with the Browns and their Cinderella story this year, at least getting back in the playoffs comes to an end?
Yeah, I think so. It's not very fun of me to say, right? It's kind of like throwing cold water on the whole thing. Like, no, they're going to go in there and they're going to beat the Chiefs and it'll be this great story. Like, I want to say that. There's nothing more I want to tell you than they're going to win. But it's hard to paint the picture, right? Like, the Browns beating the Steelers last week was a great story, but the reality is the Steelers are pretty bad, man. The Steelers hadn't looked like a good team, quite honestly, since Halloween. The Chiefs, the best story you can paint for the Browns is that the Chiefs have been starting slow the whole season. They've let teams hang around in the first half, and that the Browns can establish the running game with Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, get some play action pass, or maybe get Jarvis Landry a deep touchdown and kind of, you know, control the game. The Chiefs, if they've lost, the run defense isn't very good either, kind of like Buffalo. And that they lose control of the game, then Patrick Mahomes generally loses when he's on the sideline. And that's really the only reason he loses. But it just feels so optimistic to paint that because the Browns so need so many things to go right to make that happen, you know? And at the end of the day, it's important to remember, Kevin Stefanski, the head coach for the Browns, was like the headliner person that the Browns didn't have last week. But the Browns also didn't have two cornerbacks, Denzel Ward and Robert Jackson. I might be getting that name. Kevin Johnson. Those guys are both back. But imagine coming off the COVID list after positive corona tests, and now you have to go against the Chiefs and Tyreek Hill. This Browns secondary is not 100% healthy, and they've kind of really not had continuity the whole season. Going to the Chiefs, are averaging, I believe, with Andy Reid a coach and Mahomes a quarterback, after a bye, they're averaging like 38 points per game. So I like the Browns defense. I like Myles Garrett, but I don't see them stopping Andy Reid and Mahomes. And I don't know if the Browns can keep up, which maybe they can, but I feel like they have to do it with the running game.
You know, I'm gonna jump over to the NFC. The game over there that really intrigues me is the Bucs and Saints. Obviously, it could be the last matchup we see between the legends Tom Brady and Drew Brees. The Saints got the better of the Bucs in the first two meetings this year, but the Bucs are peaking at the right time. Brady's playing his best ball right now. How do you see this one playing out?
You know, I think the Saints are the better team. You know, you always hear this thing of like, well, it's hard to beat the same team three times a season, which is true, but the Saints already beat these guys twice, right? Like, I'm willing to throw out the first week when they met in week one and the Saints really were better than them. But when the Saints played the Bucs in week nine, they won 38-3. That was the most dominant game I saw all season. Ironically, with the exception of when the Bucs beat the Lions in week 16 or 15, I think, when the Lions didn't have their coach. So it's a weird game, right? Because the Bucs have been on both sides of the two most dominant games all season. It's really weird. But at the end of the day, we saw these teams play in week nine, and the Saints didn't even have Michael Thomas, and they crushed him. I mean, the Bucs actually set the record for fewest rushing attempts in a game. They only ran the ball five times against the Saints the last time they played because they were getting rocked. And as much as, you know, look, it's Tom Brady, that was 2 months ago, you want to throw it out. But the reality is the Saints are just better and deeper at almost every position. And I just feel that the Saints are getting Kamara back. They're getting healthy in a lot of places. We'll see if Trey Hendrickson can play. He's their defensive end. But he had as many sacks as Aaron Donald this year. I feel like if they can get to Tom Brady and pressure him, you know, Brady's QBR, which is the ESPN, it's like better passer rating, his QBR is top five in the NFL when he's in a clean pocket. But in it, under pressure, it's 31st out of 32. Tom Brady's basically Nick Mullins when he's under pressure. So if the Saints can get to him, I feel like they're just a better team.
Yeah, and Danny, I'll tell you, the other thing, too, with Tampa and why I agree with you, I think New Orleans will win this game, is because we heard so much about the Tampa defense, you know, the fewest rushing yards per game. Then they go out and they play the Washington football team with their basically their fourth string quarterback who ends up getting injured and all that stuff. And they gave up 23 points to Washington. And so then you put in Drew Brees, you put in Alvin Kamara. I think the Saints are going to roll in that one a little bit. I mean, it might be closer than I think it will be, but I do like them in that one. Then in the final game, you have the Rams who went up to Seattle, and without the 12th man in Seattle, I guess the Seahawks couldn't put it together. But you have Aaron Rodgers on the other side with the Green Bay Packers. I've liked the Packers to make it to the Super Bowl against the Chiefs or the Ravens. You look at this game too, and what's going on in Green Bay. Do the Rams have a chance? We heard today Goff is going to start at quarterback. For some, that's a positive. For some, it's a negative. What does this one look like to you? Do the Rams have any shot? I don't think they do.
you know, you always got a shot because I think that they might have the best defense left in the playoffs, right? And I think that if there's any semblance left of the idea that defense wins championships, I think you have to give them a chance. Nick Saban might disagree with that. Nick Saban even says that offense wins championships now. But, you know, I think that the Rams have a chance because they have Aaron Donald. And I mean, Aaron Rodgers, Aaron Donald. This is probably the greatest Aaron on Aaron matchup of all time. But I think it's interesting because Aaron Donald's going to be going against this poor right guard for the Packers. I forget his name, like Corey Patrick or something. This poor kid is going to have to go against Aaron Donald, who I think Troy Aikman called Aaron Donald the other day the best defensive lineman he's ever seen. And Troy Aikman's like, I've played against Lawrence Taylor. I've played with Reggie White. Aaron Donald's the best lineman I've ever seen. So that's a great. It's a really good matchup for the Rams when he's going against some, you know, because the Packers' offensive line isn't healthy. They just lost David Bakhtiari. He's their all-pro left tackle. They had to move right guard to left tackle, and then they signed this other swing tackle, and he got corona. So they don't even have a backup tackle if someone gets hurt in this game. So it doesn't take that many breaks to see them really having trouble. I think the key is Aaron Rodgers getting out of the pocket. I mentioned that QBR stat before, which is, like, better passer rating. Aaron Rodgers' QBR when he's out of the pocket is 98. It only goes to 100. He's a 98 out of 100 when he leaves the pocket. So the Rams have to contain him, and they also have to get Jalen Ramsey to win that matchup when he's covered on Davante Adams, because Davante Adams is having the best season we've really seen, quite honestly, from a receiver since Randy Moss in 2007. He had 18 touchdowns. The Rams only allowed 17 touchdowns, passing touchdowns the whole year. So I think that it's a hard pass to see them win, but it's really just about defense. And then also they need the running game to control the clock.
Danny, you led me right into my next question. I wanted to talk about the matchup of Adams and Ramsey. Ramsey, you know, he's a shutdown corner, and he did a very nice job on DK Metcalf last week. Who do you see getting the upper hand in this one?
Well, how football nerdy do you want me to get?
Nerdy's good, man. Nerdy's good.
Okay, so I think that with this game, I think the interesting thing to remember with this Rams defense is that it's a modern defense. It's completely different than what a lot of people have been doing in the NFL. And it starts with they actually prioritize stopping the passing game more than the running game. You'd think that that would be common knowledge or common practice considering we're in the passing era of football, but it's not. The Rams really want to stop the pass first. And so what they do is they don't have heavy boxes. They only have light boxes. They have six or seven guys in the box. They don't put eight men in the box and stop the run. They do that less than any in football. They're last in stacking the box, yet they still have good run defense. Because what they do is they always want two men on one in the passing game. So what that means in English is that when Davante Adams is alone on one side of the field, Jalen Ramsey's probably going to have man-on-man coverage on him on an island shadowing. Those are the moments. I don't think he's going to just follow him around all game. But when Devontae's alone, if the Packers, Davante Adams, is better than Jalen Ramsey, they can put him in an island to get man coverage on whatever the field it is and just let Devontae beat him. Now, Jalen Ramsey dominated DK Metcalf last week. Jalen Ramsey is having an amazing season. Both Davante Adams and Jalen Ramsey are first-team all-pros. They're the best at their position. Here's the thing. Jalen Ramsey dominated Metcalf, but Metcalf isn't the same kind of receiver as Davante Adams. Metcalf's a big guy. He's like Terrell Owens 2.0, right? Davante Adams is different. He's a swift route runner. He can get open. His footwork is not perfect, but it's damn close. I don't know if I can say that on the radio. I'm sorry.
You're fine.
But Davante has this mind meld with Aaron Rodgers where he comes back and gives him a look. It's a nonverbal communication. It's like they have chips in their head. And he's like, oh, right, he gave me that look. That means he wants me to run that route from the third quarter against the Cowboys in 2017. It's crazy what they can do. So it's not just the physical matchup, but it can Jalen Ramsey can't read minds. So I think that this is definitely the first time they've ever matched up one-on-one, but I also think it's the best wide receiver cornerback matchup we've seen probably since Darrell Revis was going against Calvin Johnson. So that's like the coolest thing maybe happening the entire weekend.
Yeah, that's a great way. You just sold that game, I think, for most listeners, Danny. That's awesome. We certainly appreciate you spending the time. Danny Heifetz from The Ringer. Make sure you go read his stuff. Danny_Heifetz, HEIFETZ on Twitter. Thanks so much, man. We'll talk to you on down the road.
Thank you. Have a great day, guys.
All right, there you go. You're up to date on the playoffs. Good stuff. Yeah, I agree, Evan. That Ramsey-Adams matchup, man, that's worth the price of admission alone.
Yeah, that's going to be a good one. That's must see TV, and I think he made a great point with the chemistry between Aaron Rodgers and Adams, and that I hope it's that's something that we can see you know, Derek Carr building with maybe one of his young receivers, Bryan Edwards or Henry Ruggs, sometime in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I dial up my man Q. Your boy Q will be with us. We'll have the Q-tip, and then after that, we'll close out the show talking with you. 702-365-9200 is the number. We'll also get our daily check-in with Vinny Bonsignor, whose show, In the Huddle, alongside Lincoln Kennedy, comes up next at 4 o'clock. You're with Evan. You're with Scott. This is Silver and Black Today on Raider Nation Radio.
The autumn wind is a raider, and when it blows, it comes from the Las Vegas desert. Back to Silver and Black Today, here on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
Welcome back. Silver and Black Today rolls on. It is 3:20. We're getting close to the Q-tip, so rejoining us now is our good friend, my partner, of course, your boy Q Myers. And Q, you've heard a lot of the discussion the last couple of days, of course, around the now hiring of Gus Bradley, which we talked about with you yesterday. But now a lot of, I think, the focus is going to be shifting to who do the Raiders go get? Of course, Hondo yesterday on the show talked about his sources telling about Leonard Williams being interested. We've been talking about that for a couple weeks here, right?
Yeah.
And that
everyone, you know, it's funny, and I don't mean to cut you off, but everyone all of a sudden is talking about Leonard Williams. Man, we've been talking about Leonard Williams for weeks.
Yes.
I remember, matter of fact, after that Week 17 game, the Giants and the Cowboys, where I think he wrecked shop, had about 3 sacks. I think we went into great detail on how many sacks he had this season, 11 and a half, and that's been a season high. Man, we went on in such great detail, and now, and I'm not talking about Hondo, but it's just so funny looking across the landscape of, like, Twitter and everything like that. I'm seeing everyone pop up talking about, hey, you know, a good idea would be Leonard Williams. Like, dog, we've been talking about that for weeks.
Well, not only that, but remember, early last week, we also talked, and I know we're tooting our own horn here, but sometimes you got to do it. Early last week, you and I, just in the point of discussion and in the process of discussion, talked about Richard Sherman. Now everybody's right. Talking about Richard Sherman, and now with Gus Bradley, because we kind of knew. I mean, we had the insight that Gus Bradley would be the DC, and that Richard Sherman, the relationship there going back to Seattle, it made a lot of sense. Now whether or not it happens, we don't know, but it's just funny how that all catches on. And hey, look, I understand some people come across the ideas and information late, but it's sort of funny how the rest of the world catches up with us sometimes, man. It's like,
yeah, it's just funny. Like I said, I all of a sudden see people, all these people writing articles about Leonard Williams and everything. And I just think that it was an idea that, you know, we mentioned weeks ago, and now all of a sudden it's popping up and it's like almost gospel, but that's cool. I mean, that'll work.
Yeah, that's all right, man. Cause yeah, if you ever did the tracing back to it, you'd find where it came from and kind of who started talking about it first, and that's all good. And every once in a while we have to take a victory lap. And, you brought up Leonard Williams weeks ago and we started talking to him. We've talked about him almost, I want to say almost every show since, but anyway, yeah, it would be a good fit for them, obviously. But now that's the focus. You start talking about who the Raiders can go to fill that defense now that they have their leader, now that they have almost all the position coaches or the ones that matter mostly in place, and they can start looking at that. But we won't know. That's the thing, Q. For fans, it's very hard, even for us in the radio business and the podcast business, where we have to produce content on a daily basis, is, you know, you're not going to know anything really for a couple more months, because until March comes around and right. They settle on the salary cap, and then you have the free agency period start. Now, you'll have some things happen after the Super Bowl, but that doesn't mean teams can go sign them. Teams can talk to players. They can't formalize agreements. So there's not going to be any news per se, other than who the Raiders might release as salary cap moves.
Yeah, exactly. And look, I mean, you know, we've been spending a lot of time talking about Leonard Williams. The Giants might decide to just go ahead and franchise him. They might decide that, hey, you know what? It's not worth letting him out the building. Again, he just led the team in sacks, had a career year, and they could, as they've kept their own defensive coordinator around, their DC might say, hey, I need to have my guy back. And so, you know, this all could be a pipe dream, because he might not even get out of New York. So that's also something to pay attention to. We won't know that for a while.
Yeah, we won't know that for a while. And we'll get somebody on the show here pretty soon to talk about the whole cap deal. Not only what might happen, nobody knows for sure what the cap is going to be. We talked a little bit about on yesterday's show with Hondo, but we'll also get somebody who's really steeped in the cap space stuff there too. And then also talk about the Raiders and what they're going to do. I have a story. It's not NFL related, Q, but just an interesting thing, because you're more into the NBA than I am. But the NBA, especially coming out of COVID, is looking to expand because they need more money. And so they're actually thinking for the first time since 2004 when Michael Jordan's Bobcats, which of course are now the Hornets again, expanded. So they're looking at expanding to two cities. And the reports are that Seattle is the shoe-in. Like, Seattle's going to happen. They have the money. They have the ownership. It's all ready to go. So Seattle, and that's not a bad thing because we need some supersonics in our life. But then the other two markets that are rumored to kind of be competing with one another are Kansas City and Las Vegas. Now, I grew up as a young guy in Kansas City, so I got to go watch the Kings, Phil Ford, Bill Robenstein, a bunch of old names. If you're as old as I am, you'll know who they were before they moved to Sacramento. But Kansas City and Vegas are kind of competing for that NBA spot. At least that's what the reports say. And it's real interesting because I think that, you know, Vegas has been rumored to be an NBA destination for a long time. We got the WNBA team here. That
was a long time. Yeah.
That was sort of kind of, I was supposed to be the precursor. It was like, hey, if you can take the ladies and make that franchise successful, then we'll think about giving you an NBA team. Of course, there was a disastrous NBA All-Star team years ago here, All-Star game, I should say. But the NBA Summer League is here. It does very, very well. We have exhibition games here all the time, does very well. And so I'm interested. I have to say, I think Kansas City always gets the short end of the stick. If you remember, hockey was going to go there. Mario Lemieux was going to move the Penguins there. He used them as a chip to get a new arena in Pittsburgh. If you look at this from an NBA perspective, Vegas, Kansas City, and I'm not just saying this because I'm in Vegas. I would say this if I was in Kansas City. To me, I don't see how Kansas City can compete.
No, I don't either. And Vegas has been that place, like you mentioned, that's been rumored for a long time. Matter of fact, the Sacramento Kings, as you brought them up, they were actually rumored a long time ago to be moving to Vegas. And obviously it never happened, but I kind of was banking my buck that they were going to go ahead and, do that a long time ago. And it never happened. You mentioned the All-Star game that was there, and that was a disaster. But at the same time, I think that the city would know how to better handle that now. And I think the NBA would know how to better handle that. And I think people may be just a little smarter than they were when that whole scenario shook out when they had that All-Star game there. I just think that now that the Raiders are there in Vegas, and now that the Golden Knights are, I just think that it's a professional town now. I mean, I think it is. I kind of felt like that opened up the door when the Raiders got there, that hey, they could support multiple teams there in that city. So I just think that Vegas is going to continue to grow, and that's one of the things that's so exciting about the city.
Yeah, no doubt about it. But we'll see. Yeah, we'll follow that. I just was reading in my reading earlier this morning. I came across the NBA stuff, and again, I'm not a huge NBA guy. Obviously, I track it, but I don't watch it. So I wanted to get your comments in. All right, it's that time of the day. It's time where we probe a little bit into your ears, and we give you the Q-tip.
I can't hear you, Pete.
It's time to listen up, Raider Nation.
Can't hear you, Peach.
Clear out those ears and get ready for the Q-tip. Your boy Q's daily take on what you need to hear.
That very precision seems to drive Q-tip fans right over the edge.
Like it or not.
All right, now today's Q-tip is something that I talked about today on the podcast, man. I just got to bring it to the table one more time. I just got to bring it back around just because, David Carr, I can respect his opinions. I respect what he brings to the table on NFL Network. Of course, he's obviously the older brother of Raiders quarterback Derek Carr, but he basically put out in a tweet on Wednesday talking about solutions for the Bears' problem as far as their quarterback situation goes. Deshaun Watson and his situation that's going on in Houston. And we all know that that's not a very good, a very fluid situation. But he put out a tweet saying, I have a solution for the Texans and a way out for Deshaun Watson. Watson to Chicago Bears for two first-round picks that they received from the Raiders for at 50 Deuce. And we all know on Twitter, at 50 Deuce is Khalil Mack. So then he put hashtag band back together, hashtag everybody wins, hashtag prodigal son returns. And I hate that he put that tweet out there because I know a lot of Raider Nation is taking it as, oh my gosh, he knows something is about to go down. You know what I mean? Because of who he is, because of where he works. And really, that's more of a fan saying, hey, this would be a cool scenario. Hey, it'd be nice to see, you know, him return to the Raiders. And hey, this is how it could work out. That has no legs to it at all. I don't think it's even something that would be possible. I don't think Deshaun Watson would approve a trade to the Chicago Bears. I don't think he wants to go play in Chicago. He has a no-trade clause in his contract, so that's also something that you have to remember. So he would have to approve wherever he goes. And not only that, on the Khalil Mack side of things, over the next four seasons, $26 million, $27 million, $26 million, $23 million. $102 million is how much that is over the next 4 years that he is still owed on his contract. And I'm sorry, he's not putting up Aaron Donald-type numbers. You know, he's just not. Right. He's putting up good numbers. Is he a good pass rusher? Yes, absolutely. We know that. I mean, he's one of the best in the league. But what do you have in 2020? Eight sacks, I think?
Eight, right.
You know? Max Crosby had seven. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? And so I mean, as much as, yes, it would be great to see 5-2 back out there. It'd be great to see Khalil Mack. It would have been better to see him never leave the team. But I just don't want Raider Nation to get all hot and bothered and say, oh, my gosh, I think there's something brewing because, you know, David Carr put this out there. I hate that he put that out there. I just – because, again, it feels like a fan that's really wishing. And with his status and with who he is and his, you know, his name and his affiliation with his brother, and, of course, he always is kind of popping off about the Raiders and really very supportive of them, it almost gives the fan base a false hope. And I hate to do that to the fan base. That's why anytime I put out a podcast, I never blow smoke. I never, you know, give you a sell you some BS or sell you something that is just like wishful thinking. It's something that I think is possible. If I put out something, I'm going to think that it's actually a possibility to happen and where it's coming from. And when him putting that tweet out there, I just think it gave a false sense to a lot of Raider Nation. So I just hope that you don't look too deep into that and just kind of let it be known that it's just a guy putting something out there. Just look at it as some rando dude on Twitter with no avatar just putting out a message.
The egg avatars?
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Well, and not only that, Q, I think, look, I don't know David Carr either. It seems like a nice guy. You know, he does a fine job on television. I got no problem with him. At the same time, there's a responsibility when you become someone of that stature. So you're not only an ex-athlete, former first-round pick, the whole deal, and a professional football player, but now you're on NFL Network. And yeah, I don't know that you want to call him a quote-unquote journalist. I'm not saying that. He's a TV personality. He's an analyst, and that's fine. But with that comes the responsibility that when you report things or you talk about things, even if you're saying them in jest, if you're saying it in jest, I totally get it because him and you know, his brother and Khalil Mack still are close friends.
Right.
And so if you're going to say it in jest, then say it in jest, but be clear that you're doing so. In essence, say something to the effect of, look, I got the solution. Imagine if we could only, or something
right.
that says, hey, I'm not telling you this could happen or that there's a possibility of it happening. Now, folks like you and I look at that and say, come on, dog. But at the same time, to me, you're right, because I that's what I woke up to this morning was a lot of folks. I saw your podcast, started listening to your podcast, but then I also saw these tweets. Well, oh, Khalil Mack, and it starts trending on Twitter. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Like, come on. And that's the point, right? And maybe that's what he was trying to do. I don't know. I don't know what his motives were, what he was thinking. The other thing here too, Q, that I want to touch on that I think is so dangerous about something like that, and I mean dangerous is just thoughts and getting fans fired up, is – you don't look backward, okay? So so what happened with Khalil Mack, no matter how we feel about it, whether we liked it or didn't like it, most people disliked it, okay? It doesn't matter. It's over with. It's the past. There was obviously not a connection made between Khalil Mack and, at the time, John Gruden, okay?
Right.
John Gruden and Khalil Mack, for whatever reason, there was not a coming together there. There was not a relationship established well enough to keep him in the fold. And I don't know whose fault that was. Doesn't really matter. But at the same time, it just didn't happen. So why would someone think that because, you know, it's almost selfish in my view. So because your brother's good friends with these guys and you love and you recognize how talented he is as a defensive player, you now want to go back and get him. There's no going back. It's like saying, hey, yeah, I got divorced and I'm remarried, but now I want to go back with my ex-wife. You know, it's just a crazy thing. And I just don't see the purpose in it. And I don't see the Raiders looking to Khalil Mack as some sort of football Jesus savior. It's not going to happen that way. The defense needs to be built. It needs more than one player. Don't get me wrong. If they could get a player of Khalil Mack's stature, awesome.
Right.
Awesome.
Yeah.
But to me, the problem with this, again, is just it when you look backwards, I think you repeat the mistakes of the past.
Exactly. And so, again, I saw that and hey, look, it's all great to have fun and tweet stuff out and say what you want to say. But it just, from a guy like, you know, David Carr, it makes it look like it's more reporting instead of just, hey, wouldn't this be fun? You know what I mean? And
it just kind of
made me feel like, oh, man, Raider Nation is going to get a false sense of hope. And again, he's owed $102 million. over the next 4 years. You know what I mean? He's almost 30 years old right now. He's 29 years old. I mean, like, there's a lot of factors in it as well, even if it was a possibility. But like you said, going backwards just isn't one of those things that I see happening at all. And that's a lot of bread. You know, I'd rather give it to someone who's trending up instead of a guy who's trending down.
No, exactly. And I think that's part of it. And plus, you just, again, you just, even if you repair relationships, you still have baggage. And, right. and because what happens, let's just say for the sake of argument, the Khalil Mack returned to the Raiders. Then something happens. John Gruden says something and Khalil Mack, all the feelings of the past pop up again. It's just a disaster. It's not even something that anyone entertained. And I'm willing to bet you my right big toe that the Raiders aren't even thinking this. And I understand. And that's to your point, which is if you're going to put it out there, make sure you understand and make sure people understand that what you're saying is just, hey, you're saying this because you like the guy and your families are friends. That's it.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
Pretty straightforward and move on from there. But no, it's a good point. And I think fans in general and I think Raider fans, too, because they're so hungry to win. Is don't go to the past. The past is not going to get your future bright. You have to look at what you're going to do. Nothing is easy in life. Nothing is easy in the NFL. If you want to build this team into a championship, don't go back and get players you used to have. Go get players that you need that are going to give you the dynamic nature that you can find and create to become a championship team.
Exactly. I'm with you 100%. So that's just kind of like the little things that was not bothering me, but something that was just kind of, you know, it was hanging with me. You know, I was kind of jonesing on it. I had to speak on it. So, you know, that's just what it was.
Well, again, we thank you for joining us for this portion of the show. Make sure you subscribe to his podcasts. That's podcasts. The first, of course, is Locked On Raider Nation podcast. You can get that every morning. So when you wake up, you put that puppy right on your way to work or when you're working out, whatever you're doing. And then, of course, you can also check out the Locked On Bets podcast with Lead Stirring and Paramount Sports with Q as well. You guys still rolling. Lots of NBA action. And, of course, the NFL playoffs coming this weekend.
Yeah, that too. And plus hockey. We just got starting to dibble and dabble into hockey as well. And so I'm starting to learn some more things. So, you know, I'm telling you, man, I'm a learner. You know what I mean? I don't even know if that's a real word, but it is now. So, I'm getting educated on the daily.
We're going to see Q on TV soon with an 800 number. Call me for the Q picks today.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. I'm going to be like handicap extraordinaire, man. I'll be in Vegas sooner than you think.
There you go, man. Q, as always, my friend, thanks for joining us when you can. We appreciate it, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right, my man. Appreciate it.
All right, we're going to step aside. When we return, Silver and Black Today rolls on here on this Thursday. Don't go anywhere. You're on Raider Nation Radio.
Sports Update is brought to you by Finley Volvo Cars, Las Vegas' fastest growing luxury brand, putting safety first since 1927.
Mark Davis announced today, he said, "I am excited to announce that I've entered into an agreement to purchase the Las Vegas franchise in the WNBA from the MGM Resorts International. I will have more to say once I receive official approval from the WNBA Board of Governors and have had a chance to speak with the players, coaches, and administrators of the team."
Welcome back to Silver and Black Today. Here's Scott Gulbranson and Q Myers.
Welcome back, Scott Gulbranson and Evan Grote, my special co-host today. Silver and Black Today, of course, powered by our good friends Sam and Ash Injury Attorneys, 702-820-1234, because you deserve what's best. Breaking at this hour as suspected, and now Ian Rappaport is reporting the deal is done. Urban Meyer is the next Jaguars head coach, per a source, and Ian Rappaport there. So, Evan, we also welcome in now our good friend Vinny Bonsignor from the Las Vegas Review-Journal, also hosts In the Huddle coming up next here on Raider Nation Radio. So, Vinny, reaction to Urban Meyer going to the Jags?
Opportunity lost, I thought, for the Chargers. I heard that they were at least thinking about making a big run at a big name. Urban Meyer was people that I had talked to said that they felt like he would be in that mix, and I thought that would have been a home run hire for the Chargers. I thought it would have been a great move for Urban Meyer. I can't see why he wouldn't have been excited about that possibility, assuming that Dean Smanos and Chargers wanted to pony up the money. But when you're talking about Justin Herbert and that defense, with a healthy Derwin James and everything that they've got going on offense, being in Los Angeles, it just made a lot of sense to bring in somebody that was going to bring in some pizzazz for your organization, trying to make your mark in Los Angeles. But The Chargers didn't go in that direction, and so now he goes to Jacksonville, and I love it. You know, I'm really fascinated what Urban Meyer can bring to the table as an NFL coach. I think that's part of the curiosity here. Could he translate what he did, you know, at Florida, what he did at Ohio State, to the next level, to the NFL level? And I think what's working in his favor is, as opposed to, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, the offense that he was running and what he was doing in college football at that point, maybe the NFL didn't have much of an appetite for going down that road. But now it's all over the league. It's all over the NFL. So, you know, he gets to go into a situation where, you know, that's pretty much the norm now, or some derivative of what he was doing in college is now very much, you know, in vogue in the NFL. So really excited for Urban Meyer, really excited for the NFL, and I think the Jacksonville Jaguars, you know, created some major buzz for them for themselves, along with Trevor Lawrence presumably being the number one pick overall. So I'm jacked up about it.
Yeah, Evan and I talked about this earlier too, as we were talking about this before it was at least verified or somewhat verified from Ian Rappaport here at this hour. Was that there's that chatter. Well, now if it's Urban Meyer, maybe Justin Fields. I don't see that happening, Vinny. I said, I think Justin Fields is a fine young athlete. I think he you know, with development could be a good NFL quarterback, but he's nowhere to me in the same league as Trevor Lawrence.
Urban Meyer didn't get where he got in his career by being
famous.
Overly sentimental to connections or anything like that. That's there is no way, none, zero, no chance at all that he would take Justin Fields over Trevor Lawrence. And anyone who's, you know, it makes maybe for some entertainment, you know, and entertaining tweets, but
sure,
come on, he's going to Jacksonville. Part of the reason that he's going to Jacksonville is that they backed up the Brinks truck, I'm sure, but also the opportunity to step into a situation where you're working with what looks to be a generational talent at quarterback. That's the reason. That's a big part of the reason why he's going.
Vinny Bonsignor is our guest, of course, hosts In the Huddle next here from 4 to 6 p.m. on Raider Nation Radio. Also the beat writer for the Raiders at the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Vinny, you mentioned the Chargers and the coaching job down there. Obviously, this is inside the division for the Raiders. Three of the coaches on the defensive side of the ball from the Chargers come over with the Gus Bradley hire. What are the Chargers going to do there? What do you see now that Urban Meyer is probably not in the game? Are they in play with Eric Bieniemy? Would he stay in the division? I mean, look, I know he's interviewing for every job there is, and there's even been some reports saying that he's not a favorite candidate of all these positions, which I don't necessarily put any stock in. But when you look at the Chargers' job situation, who might their number two be?
Well, I don't necessarily think that Urban was their number one. So, I don't think it doesn't appear that they made a
big push.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, if that's your number one, you pay what it's going to take to get them, even if it means trumping somebody else's offer. So I think that, first of all, it really is an attractive job. You take away, you know, the fan base part of it and, you know, the fact that in Los Angeles you're going to be, you know, you're in that second tier with the Clippers and the Kings and teams like that. Nothing against any of those teams, but it's not the Lakers, it's not the Dodgers, it's not the Rams, it's not USC football. You got to climb your way up that ladder. So, but short of that, this is really a pretty attractive job. You look at that roster, there's players on this roster. You get Joey Bosa back healthy and Derwin James back healthy. It's a young defense. Tom Telesco has done a terrific job of putting that roster together. You've got Justin Herbert, who just looked like one of the best young quarterbacks to ever step foot in the NFL. That's not hyperbole. His statistics show that he did things that no rookie quarterback has ever done. So you presume he's going to get better. So it is a really exciting job. And I don't think there's any shortage of candidates out there. And you know, when you think about Robert Saleh from the 49ers, Brian Daboll from the Buffalo Bills, who seems like, I think, those two guys might be the one and two right now, just the sense that I'm kind of getting. Not quite sure about Eric Bieniemy, and I'm not quite sure, you know, what all that is all about. You know, every single year we hear his name being bandied about, but every single year to this point, he doesn't end up, you know, holding the roses at the end of the day. And I'm not quite sure why that is, but it's, you know, I don't know why that is, but it doesn't feel like he's in that picture in a major way. I could be wrong, but it doesn't feel like that.
Yeah, it's interesting because you've heard so much about his success and that he's one of the top candidates, and then it doesn't seem like it always works out. And this year, like I said, there were some reports yesterday, and I don't know the source they came from. I wasn't necessarily familiar with, so I wasn't sure how the veracity of it was. But really interesting times. What did you think of also the purchase today of the Aces by Mark Davis?
Love it. I really do love it. You know, I know that Mark A was a huge fan of the Aces. And I think he put his money where his heart is by buying them. And it shows, not that this was ever in question, but the roots that he's laying here in Las Vegas and, you know, the mark he wants to make in this new market, not just for today or tomorrow, but long standing. You know, I think that this is part of it. And who knows, maybe there's an NBA team in the future here. And wouldn't that be pretty cool? But just throwing that out there, I have no insight knowledge of anything like that. But I really do think that it shows the respect that he has for the WNBA, that brand, that team. You know, again, he's a huge fan of it. And that sport, that league has grown by leaps and bounds over the years, and it's, you know, I tell everyone watch their games. I mean, it's, if you want to see skill, if you want to see a beautiful brand of basketball, if you're a true fan of basketball and the fundamentals and the greatness of that game at that level, they're playing top notch basketball in the WNBA. Don't sleep on it, and I think Mark understands that.
Hey, Vinny, it's Evan. I got a Raiders-related question I'd like to ask you. Obviously, the big news this week was Gus Bradley hired as the defensive coordinator. What do you think the chances are that he brings in a veteran, a guy that is familiar with his system, some of the names that keep popping up, a guy like Melvin Ingram or even a Richard Sherman? What do you think the chances of something like that happening are?
Not quite sure about Richard Sherman. I think they need to get young. Not young. I think they need to get an in their prime safety back there to help with that defense. And I've been all over John Johnson, Marcus May from the Jets, Justin Simmons from the Denver Broncos, someone among that group that could come in there and not just, you know, man that position at a really, really high level, and it's a critical position for the Raiders, but somebody that's going to be the quarterback of that secondary, on a young secondary, and somebody that's going to be a sounding board and an example and a role model for your Trayvon Mullins and your Damon Arnett's and your Jonathan Abrams. You know, so I that's the direction that I would go in. Certainly Melvin Ingram, if he's got anything left in the gas tank, he's got a history, obviously, with Gus Bradley. The Raiders need some pass rush, obviously. So I would imagine that he's somebody that, you know, you can't write off the list whatsoever. The Raiders are going to do everything. They're not going to leave any stone unturned in their quest to put together as formidable a defensive line as they possibly can. Obviously, salary cap comes into play, where you're drafting comes into play. All of those things are going to be a factor. But I think that's priority number one, is building a defensive line that really allows Gus Bradley to do what he does on the back end. And so we'll see where all that is headed. But Melvin Ingram, I would certainly keep an eye on that.
All right, Vinny Bonsignore. Okay, Vinny, what do you have coming up on the show at 4 o'clock?
Well, we're going to definitely talk about all these moving parts. Urban Meyer going to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Really happy for Brad Holmes, who I got to know really well covering the Los Angeles Rams. You know, I got a sense early on in the process that Brad was going to be a pretty big in contention for that general manager job with the Detroit Lions. He got it officially today. I couldn't be happier. And I think the Lions really got a quality general manager and a tremendous human being. I think that he's going to restore order over there. You know, keep looking at targets, Melvin Ingram, John Johnson, you know, Justin Simmons, who the Raiders can really start zeroing in on. I'm going to be going to the Senior Bowl next week, so we'll talk about that. Not next week, but the week after. So a lot that's going on. And of course, this great weekend of football coming up too.
Yeah, the playoffs are gonna be fantastic this weekend. That Buffalo Baltimore game, Vinny, man, I think that's gonna be fun. I know the Rams and the Packers are gonna be a good game too, and of course you have the Chiefs and the Browns. But to me, that Buffalo game and the weather's gonna be bad. Evan lives up there, so he's got to actually shovel his sidewalk before the game. But it's gonna be fun watching
the Bills to see snowblower.
That's right. Is it gonna be
a bad weather game?
Well, they're right now it's calling for a 50% chance. So I mean that could change, but there could
that's
be
every day up in Buffalo.
Yeah. Buffalo in January. It's gonna be crappy.
Because last week it was beautiful. It looked like anyway.
Yeah,
last
that's true. It was cold. It was cold, but the sun was out. That was the first time the sun was out in a long time. But it's calling for windy, real strong winds and a mixture of rain and snow. So that's never pleasant to play football in.
No, and I'm really fascinated about that game. I thought that Baltimore and Lamar and that defense really turned a corner late in the season. I think they're right exactly mm-hmm. where they want to be. John Harbaugh does such an excellent job of getting his team in the right place where it needs to be at the most important time of the year. I really like where the Baltimore Ravens are right now, and I think that defense, Lamar being able to hurt you in so many different ways. It'll be interesting to see if they could go into Buffalo and get a win. But I also like where the Buffalo Bills are, and I think if it's a bad weather game, it really does both quarterbacks perfectly suited to play in the bad weather because they can beat you in so many different ways. So I don't think that's going to be a major, major factor. But one of those quarterbacks is going to make, the one or two plays that need to be made to put their team into the next round.
Yeah, all these young AFC quarterbacks are fun to watch because that's, the future and the now and the future. And then, of course, on the NFC side, you have the old graybeards like us, Vinny, who are kind of in the twilight but still got a plenty left in the tank to try to go out and win it. So it's going to be fun to watch. All right, catch Vinny coming up next at 4 o'clock here on Raider Nation Radio with In the Huddle. Vinny, take care. We'll talk to you tomorrow, buddy.
All right, guys. Have a good one. Take care, Evan. Enjoy the weekend.
Have a good show.
All right, there you go. Vinny Bonsignore, always good to talk to him and get his perspective. He's covered the NFL for so long. But, Evan, we're closing up on the show here. A couple more minutes left. But I want to thank you for joining me today. But I do think, I don't know if you heard the Q-tip with Q. I don't understand people who want to go backwards and start talking and making videos about trying to get a trade for Khalil Mack. It makes no sense to me.
Yeah. Q had to go back and open up that wound for Raider fans.
He tore off the Band-Aid, right?
Yeah, I tore that Band-Aid off. And, that was, looking back on it, I was very upset at the time. Who doesn't love Khalil Mack? But I think now, in hindsight, looking at what they're paying Mack and the production that he's giving them, I think he was an all-pro again this year, but... eight sacks, he causes some fumbles. Those are always good things. The Raiders defense obviously needs that. But for $30 million a year, I just don't think it was worth it. So I think in hindsight, I like the move that the Raiders made. And I know that may sound strange to some people, but I think it's all going to work out for the Raiders.
Well, and I think it'll all be, and not forgotten, but I think a lot of the fan base would get over it when the Raiders go out, hopefully, this year and go get a stud for that edge or a stud inside that's going to create a lot of havoc for the opposing quarterback. So we'll have to see. And I think they will. I really do, Evan. And it'll be fun. So, all right. Make sure you subscribe to Evan's podcast, The Just Pod Baby. You can find it anywhere you get your podcast. Evan, man, thanks so much for sitting in with me today.
Yep, no problem. Anytime.
All right. For our producer, David Stepanian, for our engineer back in the studio, Chris Chapman, I'm for Q Myers. I am Scott Colbranson. We appreciate you guys being here. Make sure you follow me on Twitter at LVGully, at SilverBlack, the number 2 day, and check out the website, silverandblacktoday.com, with all the latest news up there, including today's news about Mark Davis buying the WNBA Las Vegas Aces. For everybody here at Raider Nation Radio, have a good night, everybody.